to sneeze at. Yesterday's lunch with Dane proved to be an eye-opening experience. Every time I think he's going to do something to really put me off, he manages to surprise me. In a good way. Again, he half-Nelsoned me to the mat with his honesty. When he admitted that I made him crazy, I knew it was over for me. It hit me in a rare soft spot. Unfortunately, I have first-hand knowledge that nothing good comes from having a soft spot for a good-looking, smooth-talking man. As soon as I got home, I began researching his charity work. True to his word, the Dane Wilder Charitable Foundation has been hosting a summer camp for inner-city at-risk boys for the past 7 years, called Man Up. And that's only some of the work it does. They've raised scholarship money, donated computers. Currently, they're renovating a rec center located in one of Brooklyn's poorest neighborhoods. He's done more for kids than I've ever done. My donations pale by comparison. With every article I read singing his praises, I shrank in my seat on the couch until I was hiding under the pillows. As badly as I want to tell him that this won't work, for all intents and purposes we're oil and water, neutral colors to bright neons, I can't bring myself to do it. He's earned the chance. And if I was being completely honest, something about him is endearing. Even his teasing is harmless. I spent most of lunch wrestling down a grin. And I believe him when he says he won't shirk his responsibilities. The foundation, football, both require commitment, effort, and time. He's proven he can do it. Maybe he's not such a risky choice after all. Tell me again why I had to meet you here, I ask, exhaustion making me snippy. And on a school night, no less? It's already 9, also known as past my bedtime. Because you're my friend, that's why, you're contractually obligated. And because I'm researching my next novel, a time travel golf romance. And what does that have to do with you futzing around on a golf course simulator? She stops mid-swing and leans on her club. Sometimes I wonder if you're human, she says, head shaking in disappointment. Look around you. Hot guys galore. The place is packed with young professionals. She beams at someone beyond my shoulder. I don't have to look to know it's one of those hot guys. What about Colton? Colton is on death row. She resumes her stance, testing out her putting swing. What crime did he commit? He's getting clingy. How clingy? I'm compelled to ask because in the past, Delia dumped a guy who felt it necessary to have a few dinners and a conversation before getting naked. She believes gay men and women are for conversation, straight men are for sport. Her words, not mine. He threw a bitch fit when I told him I don't do sleepovers. The nerve of him. Did you forget what he did to me when we first started dating? And then I recall. Colton was a bad boy, jerking Delia around, canceling dates last minute and showing up on TMZ with a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader or some such person when he said he wasn't seeing anyone else. The hazards of dating a Major League Baseball player, I guess. I tried to be nice to him, I really did, but he wasn't having it. So now that I have the 5-inch heel of my Chanel thigh-high boot shoved up his ass, he thinks he's in love. Shrugging, she adds, don't hate the player, hate the game. I do hate the game, that's why I don't play. Changing topic, I think I found him. Delia's head snaps up and the golf ball goes flying to her left. It almost hits the group next to us. Sorry, we both yell. Tell me everything, she demands, attention captivated. Gay? No, I groan, still sore about that development. They didn't want me.
Bummer.
Tell me about it.
So?
He's a friend of Ethan's. His name is Dane Wilder. He's a...
Her brown eyes narrow suspiciously. A porn star?
She interrupts. What? No, he's not a porn star.
That name is very familiar. Are you sure he's not a porn star?
I'm positive he's not a porn star. He's a retired football player. And then it dawns on me.
Oh, God! Do you think you might have slept with him? I screech in a panic. Is that why he sounds familiar?
I'd have to start my search all over again. I could never look at him again without picturing him in a compromising position with Delia.
Don't be ridiculous. I'd remember him if I slept with him. You know how I keep track of that stuff on my phone. I would have raided and shelved him, and look.
Pulling out her cell from the back pocket of her skinny jeans, she taps away on the screen and holds it up for my perusal.
See? It's in alphabetical order. He's not there.
Heaving a sigh of relief, I slump down on a bar stool and take a big gulp of my fancy craft beer.
Thank God for your organizational skills.
Still, your kid will sound like a baby porn star.
Imagine what the other kids at school will do to him. My glare has no effect on her. She starts practicing her putt again. Not for long, it seems. Straightening, expression super pensive, she adds.
And if you ever married him, your name would be Star Wilder. Very porny.
No one is getting married. There's a greater chance of me becoming an actual porn star.
Just saying. So, you think he's the one?
As she's asking, the answer comes to me loud and clear. My mind whispering yes, while my lips say, we'll see. It's only Tuesday, and already one of the worst weeks of my life. I was late making a decision on a stock, and my hesitation cost the hedge fund a boatload of money. I've never had an issue making decisions, but lately my head hasn't been in the game the way it should be. On the way home, I made a single stop to purchase a bottle of wine. And now, as I sit on the couch, absently staring out my window with glass filled to the brim in hand, it occurs to me that once again I have no food in the house. On cue, my stomach rumbles. My phone dings with an incoming text. Dane.
Come over.
In the whopping 3 days since my lunch date, my lunch companion has texted me 5 times. That's 5 texts asking if I'd made a decision in 3 days.
I can only imagine what he was like as a kid. Are we there yet? Must have been playing on a loop.
Me.
No.
The man is relentless. Well, on the contrary, I can't seem to pull the trigger on anything lately. Dane.
Then let me up.
You can imagine the confusion this evokes. Me.
What do you mean, let you up? Where are you?
Dane.
Downstairs.
I'm frozen, glass inches from my mouth and fingers hovering over the keyboard of my cell phone. Dane.
Don't think too hard, Stella. Let me up.
If I thought there was any way to make him go away quietly, I would. However, I've learned that it's almost impossible to get this guy to do anything he doesn't want to do. With a tired sigh, I type, me.
You've got 15 minutes and only 15. Dane.
Deal.
Smiley face.
He smiles way too much, even in texts. Minutes later, my doorbell chimes. I peer through the viewhole and see throat. A moment later, he stoops and I see a broad, white grin.
With a none too pleased look on my face, I open the door and find him standing there in sweatpants and a plain white t-shirt. Any hope I had that he stopped by on his way to a date fizzles.
Hitting the booze already, huh?
He says, eyeballing my glass.
I'll take one too, thanks.
He walks past me without waiting for an invitation.
Come on in. Make yourself at home.
I drawl while he looks around. Shoes off. After towing off his sneakers, he moves through my apartment, inspecting everything as if he were casing the joint. Then he makes a right into the kitchen. A moment later, I hear the opening and closing of my kitchen cabinets.
Nice place.
His voice carries from my living room. I follow it there. Thanks, I practically grunt.
Aside from the fact that this is very obviously where fun comes to die.
He places the glass on the coffee table and throws himself down on my couch, legs spread apart, hands locked behind his head.
I think your couch just dented my ass. Most uncomfortable couch I've ever sat on.
I do not find this remotely funny. The apartment is decorated in soothing shades of gray and ivory. Color feels like a big commitment. So I like neutrals. So what? That makes me a killjoy? And the couch is Italian, damn it. It took me months to pull the trigger on spending that kind of money. You have 13 minutes.
Are you hungry?
No. My stomach begins to rumble. While the traitor, also known as my stomach, yawns and gurgles and howls and makes a liar out of me, Dane's winged brows nearly reach his hairline. My hand presses against it in fear the noise may never stop.
Let me take you to dinner.
I'm not in the mood, Dane, I quietly admit, throwing myself down on the couch next to him. I've had a shitty day at work, and all I want to do is sit here and stare blankly at the wall and contemplate what a shitty day I've had.
What happened?
Attention suddenly rapt. When I don't grant him an answer, he prods.
Maybe I can help.
I've never been one to talk about my problems. I like to mull them over in private, beat myself senseless with them, make myself stare at them until I want to vomit. Then I move on. That's my routine. That's always been my routine. Why mess with perfection? Which is why I find it odd that as I study the man draped all over my way too expensive Italian handmade couch, wearing an expression of genuine interest, I feel like talking. Dane has a way of pushing that doesn't make me want to push back. I don't feel forced, but rather cajoled senseless, rendered too stupid to resist. I screwed up. The analysts said the company was well-managed and had enormous growth potential, but insurance is not a sector I'm very familiar with, so I balked. News broke that the company was being bought out and the stock went through the roof. It cost us millions. I explain in one breath.
You released the ball late and got intercepted.
He offers, nodding. What?
You doubted your gut instinct.
Yes.
Happens to the best of us. You gotta let it go and get ready for the next snap.
Huh?
Your work requires quick thinking and decision-making. You don't have time to feel sorry for yourself. There'll be another trade tomorrow and you'll make up the potential loss in revenue.
Don't stop trusting yourself. We stare at each other. His words continue to tumble around my head. Simple and perceptive. They soothe that raw place inside of me that says I need to work harder than anyone else, that feels the need to prove myself every single day. They smother the voice that says I need to be perfect. With a few thoughtful words, Dane Wilder has accomplished the impossible. He made me feel better. He smiles, and it's not one of his wicked grins, or his cocky one, or the smug one. It's soft and sweet, and I find myself smiling back. My landline rings, cutting short the easy vibe traveling between us. Blinking out of it, I reluctantly get up and answer.
Hi, Ms. Donovan. A Mr. Garner is here to see you.
Holy crap! Jeff is here! My stomach drops, and not in a good way. I need to get Dane out of here before Jeff reaches my floor. I don't even know how to explain Dane to Jeff. Not that he deserves an explanation, but I know he'll press for one. Lawyers. Eddie, give me 5 minutes, and then you can send him up.
You got it, Ms. Donovan.
Back in the living room, I find Dane sipping his wine and staring dreamily at the panorama with no knowledge of the shitstorm that's coming. He turns to face me. For a fleeting moment, I see some type of appreciation cross his face. Of what, specifically, I'm not sure. The hand-wringing starts. I hate being rude. And I hate when others are rude. Treating people with respect takes little to no effort. There's never a good excuse. Except for this very moment.
I hate to be rude, but... I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
He stares. He stares some more.
His brow bunches up.
Why?
More hand-wringing on my part. His eyes narrow, scanning my face and finding all the telltale signs of rising anxiety. He places the unfinished wine on the coffee table and stands.
Is someone here? Downstairs?
His tone says he's not going to go away quietly.
Someone you're dating?
He adds sharply. No, I practically shout. I mean, not anymore. Someone I used to date. Can you leave, please? I don't have time to argue with you.
Why?
His jaw pulses with pent-up anger.
Anger? Why would he be angry? Did you invite him over?
Didn't he show up uninvited as well? That is none of your business, and you're being really pushy about this. I don't want him to see what's going on here.
I'm talking quickly now, getting antsy as time slips away.
What do you mean you don't want him to see what's going on here?
He snaps, throwing my words back at me, his index finger drawing the same invisible circle between us I just drew with mine. The doorbell rings. Oh, balls. All I wanted to do was drink my sorrows away. Don't leave this room, I order, pointing at the mulish giant before I stalk away to answer the door. I open the front door to a tired-looking Jeff. He greets me with a wan smile. His suit rumpled like it never is. 2 days' worth of dark brown stubble on his face and circles under his eyes.
Are you okay?
Is the first thing that comes out of my mouth.
No.
His familiar brown eyes slide up and down my body, nothing other than mild interest in them.
You didn't return any of my calls.
I've been busy. Work. You know how it is. Bald-faced lie, but I've got nothing else. I'll always remember my time with Jeff fondly. Part of me still misses the early days, when I was still wowed by his J. Crew good looks and his rower's body, that laid-back, sexy way he has of drawing a person in, making them think that every word that comes out of their mouth is a diamond to be treasured.
Can I come in?
He asks with a playful smirk. It's then I realize I haven't moved out of the doorway to let him enter. Sorry. Hands stuffed in his suit pants, he steps inside and halts, looking somewhat lost as he glances around.
Nice place.
Thanks. Is this a bad time to ask what you're doing here?
We need to talk.
Sounds ominous. For a moment, I'm worried. Jeff.
Why didn't you want to marry me?
Last time I saw Jeff was at a Super Bowl party Ethan threw for Calvin. This is what he asks after seeing me for the first time in 5 years? Standing awkwardly in the entrance of my new apartment, he asks why I didn't want to marry him 9 years ago? My instinct is to be completely honest. Straightforward is my generally preferred style. Something in his eyes has me pulling my punches, though. Let's have a seat. Can I get you something to drink?
I have no food in the house, so if you're hungry, you're out of luck.
As I lead Jeff into the kitchen, my mind is still in the living room, wondering what the heck I'm going to do about Dane. Jeff finds the open bottle of red on the counter and inspects the label. I grab a glass out of a cabinet and hand it to him. Leaning against the counter, I give him time to pour himself a glass. Why are you here, Jeff? It can't be about a marriage proposal that happened 9 years ago. He takes a sip of the wine, his gaze purposely aimed at the bottle. I've never seen Jeff look so serious.
This can't be good. I've decided to have this kid with you. I'd prefer to get married, but I'll take the kid for now and we can discuss the rest later. I've already started shopping for firms in New York.
Calling me surprised is putting it lightly. I grip the counter for purchase, the only thing I can manage at the moment.
What? You can't be here, Jeff,
is all I can think to say. I'm panicking. This is too much drama for me. Any drama is too much drama for me.
Yeah, you can't be here, Jeff,
a voice booms from the next room. Oh, balls. My shoulders curve in as I brace for what's about to happen next. Jeff looks shocked, rightfully so.
Who the fuck is that?
Jeff says. Dane steps into the kitchen looking like the wrath of God personified. Jeff blinks, taking in the man standing in the doorway. All puffed up, the wrath of God looks even bigger.
Dane Wilder is in your apartment,
Jeff absently tells me.
That's correct, Jeffrey,
says the man he speaks of. I rub my temples. Where there was only a mild ache not too long ago, there is now a steady pounding. Dane, can you give us a minute?
What's Dane Wilder doing in your apartment?
Long story, I sigh.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Jeffrey, but you're too late. Stella and I are having a baby.
Here we go.
What?
Jeff shouts, snapping out of his stargazing fog all at once. His eyes slam into mine, flashes of betrayal in them.
Dane, I grind out. I'm going to have to ask you to leave if you don't stay out of this.
I was here first. Why don't you ask him to leave?
Says the 5-year-old trapped in a man's body. Jeff, he's right. I'm having the baby with Dane. My eyes slide over to see Dane smiling so broadly his face might break. I didn't even realize I'd made a decision until Jeff pressed me on it. Now that I've said it out loud, though, something inside of me relaxes. After what he told me about his relationship with his father, I have no doubt that he will be a devoted parent as well. And with the stipulation that he keeps his personal life far from our child, the fact that he has no intention of settling down means my son or daughter won't have to share him with anyone else. An added bonus. This is good. This works.
This is happening.
Jeff looks befuddled. I can see him trying to figure out how it happened without his knowledge, and something, maybe an odd sense of loyalty to the friendship we once shared, makes me feel bad.
I don't understand. How do you two know each other?
I glare at Dane, who remains completely unfazed at my best attempts to shame him into submission.
We were introduced through a friend,
Dane answers. Jeff stares at me blankly. Ethan, I explain.
How long has this been going on?
Long enough,
Dane is quick to add. I have to give him credit for skirting the truth without actually lying. Jeff runs a hand through his hair, exhaling harshly.
He'll fuck you over, Stell. This guy has the worst reputation when it comes to women.
In the privacy of my mind, I'm curling up in a ball. Either I allow him to believe it's an intimate relationship with a man exactly like my father, a topic Jeff and I had discussed many times at his insistence, or I tell him about the contract, neither of which I really want to explain to him. Dane takes the decision out of my hands when he steps further into the room, all charged up now that his integrity has been questioned.
Do I know you?
He says, stabbing an index finger at Jeff.
No, I do not. So don't presume to know shit about me.
Okay, that's enough. I step between the two of them. Placing a hand on Dane's chest, he steps back with only the slightest effort from me. I push him all the way out of the kitchen and into the hallway. If you want to impress me, you will keep your mouth shut and stay out of this. His hands go straight to his lean hips. his face stiff.
You want me to keep quiet while that judgmental fucker...
Language, I hiss, cutting off the rest of his mini tirade. And keep it down, will you?
He dances in here without an invitation,
he continues in a lower voice.
Tries to mess with all my hard work, and I'm supposed to keep my mouth shut.
Dances? Hard work? I can't. Stay here or leave. Your choice.
Stay here.
Dane grunts with an indignant lift of the chin. Back in the kitchen, Jeff is rinsing out his wine glass.
I should go,
he says in the most dejected voice, and the heart I seldom hear from cries out for him. Jeff is a good person. Despite what Delia thinks that he's a pompous asshole, or my mother, that he's selfish, I know this man. I know he's a good person. Jeff, I say with all the sympathy I can muster. I'm sorry. I really am. But you said no, and maybe it was for the best. With all the history we have between us, it would have complicated things.
And he doesn't complicate things?
No, he doesn't. I don't expect you to understand, but it's the truth. He turns then and takes me in, acceptance etched in the grooves bracketing his fine lips.
Why didn't you want to get married? Was it me?
You weren't in love with me, Jeff. What you had for me was affection. You convinced yourself we were a good match and that it was enough, but it wouldn't have been. Eventually, we would have split up. When you find someone you're crazy about, you'll call to thank me, and I'll say I told you so. Nodding, his brow furrows and his eyes fall to the floor. When he looks back up, he says,
Are you sure about this guy? I don't want to see you hurt.
I'm sure. He doesn't have the power to hurt me. Chapter 9. Stella. Across the park, I spot Delia walking a cow. At least it looks like a cow from afar, though it's probably a dog. Anything with fur and Delia is advocating for its rights. Fostering hard-to-place dogs happens to be her thing. Is he safe? Or am I in danger of losing a hand if I get any closer? You're in danger, all right, but not from this one, she says, pointing to the black and white giant. It's this one you need to stay away from. Suddenly, a small, somewhat mangled head pops out of the doggy bag slung over her shoulder. A half-toothless, one-eyed chihuahua growls viciously. With the cow leading the way, we walk over to the dog park on East 86th, a stone's throw from the East River Walk. What kind of dog is this anyway? A Harlequin Great Dane. He was born mostly blind.
Wonderful.
The point of getting together with Delia was to stop obsessing about the decision I made. All for naught, Dane's presence has stalked me here as well. A mini panic seized me this morning when I realized I promised Dane that I wouldn't back out before we signed the contract. For someone that has absolutely no qualms about making million-dollar decisions, I'm failing in spectacular fashion at this one. The large dog area is mostly empty. We walk in and take a seat on one of the empty benches. The big one obediently sits.
He's sitting on my feet.
He's trying to get close to you. Tupac has self-esteem issues. He's scared of any dog larger than Biggie Smalls. She motions to the tiny tyrant in her bag. I've been working on socializing him a little at a time. 2 weeks ago, he wouldn't even walk in here.
Tupac and Biggie?
I'm trying to inspire some confidence.
I thought you weren't supposed to name them.
I'm not supposed to eat carbs past 10 or pick at my face, but guess what? She points at the tiny zit with a scab on her chin.
Have you made a decision?
I think so, I grumble.
What's the holdup?
I'm not sure if he's the worst case of arrested development I've ever encountered, or it's all an act.
What are you leaning toward?
An act.
Then he's the perfect opposite of you.
Loose where you're tight, she explains, tucking a loose piece of blonde hair behind her ear. I say blonde because since we met, Delia has reinvented herself. Where there was once a mass of red hair, there is now a sexy platinum blonde bob. I search for clues that she's joking and come up empty. That would be terrible. And I'm not tight.
Au contraire, it would balance the equation. You would complement each other. And girl, you are tight. I don't know anybody else who schedules their weekends with ringtone alerts for lunch and sleep.
Or I would look like the bitter killjoy for imposing some structure, and Dane will end up the superhero that lets the kid do anything. I shoot my supposed best friend an admonishing glare. And getting 7 hours of sleep is really important.
Not as important as getting off.
I look her way and she shrugs.
How's Tina?
Back at work, acting like nothing's happened. I'm worried.
Have you told her?
Every time I try to summon the courage to tell Tina about my plans, I back out at the last minute. I shake my head. No words necessary.
So you find this mystery dad, maybe it's this Dane guy, then what? You never date again?
You're going to give up your prime sex years to raise a child by a man who's basically a stud for hire? Leave it to my bestie to go straight for the jugular. When you put it that way, it sounds so appealing.
Explain it to me then. Make me understand why you would sacrifice the best years of your life.
I don't know if I can, Del. It's a feeling, an urge. It's always been there, this longing. Like something's missing.
And the sex longing isn't there?
It comes and goes, I admit with an embarrassed shrug. Basically, no.
And the man longing?
Sadly, less so. And being a single mother isn't the end of the world dating-wise. There are plenty of single fathers out there that would understand. One can hope. Delia gives me a long, hard look. My sounding board. My polygraph test. She must like what she sees because she remarks,
"Single daddies, you say?"
On cue, a hot guy jogging behind a sports inline stroller passes us on his way to the Riverwalk.
I'll take single daddies for the win.
After my lunch with Delia, I take the subway to 22nd Street. From there, I walk down Park Ave. On my way home, my cell rings. I glance at it, expecting a call from Alex or my mother. Instead, I see Jeff's name flash on screen.
Why him?
He says as soon as I answer. Apparently, he's beyond exchanging pleasantries. Sigh. I guess it was too much to ask that he let the matter rest.
Stella?
I'm here.
Well?
It's not what you think. My feet stop moving. I can't outmaneuver him mentally and walk at the same time. People flow around me like salmon swimming upstream, single-minded in their objective to get to where they're going.
Then what is it? Because I remember having a shitload of conversations about your explicit dislike of men that sleep around and this guy fucks anything that moves.
Lovely. I know he's upset, and his precious male ego is probably a tad bruised. However, I really don't have it in me to make him feel better about it. I really don't want to have this conversation with you.
Why not? You called a few months ago and asked to have this baby with me, and now you're having one with him. A guy you hardly know and one that goes against everything you value.
He's got me there. Balls.
Because it's a contract!
I half shout, a few heads turning to stare. I move closer to a building entrance, huddling under the overhang for a little privacy.
A contract?
An arrangement. We co-parent. Everything is negotiated. We share custody and expenses, nothing else. He's nothing else to me.
Oh.
An eternity later.
I don't know what to say. That's a first.
One I'm grateful for. There's nothing to say, Jeff. I'm sorry I got you into this, but I've made my decision. Bye. With that, I hang up. One more loose end wrapped up. Everything is finally clicking into place, my future forming into a very clear path. Time to face the firing squad. As soon as I step in the front door of Calvin and Camilla's house, I hear Cam's voice drifting from the kitchen and head in that direction. I'm pretty sure that's a felony. No. No, you cannot. I really don't want to hear... She chuckles. No, don't do that. We'll come and visit after you move.
Okay.
Camilla and I struck up a friendship when she started working for Calvin, our mothers' similar opinions of how we should conduct our personal life serving as common ground. At the time, Cam was a widow and not looking to ever get hitched again. We bonded pretty quickly over our mutual dissenting opinion of marriage. Cell phone tucked between her shoulder and ear, Camilla sees me walk in and waves, then points in the direction of the backyard patio. I'm about to step out the French doors when I hear, "You better be kidding." "Yeah, listen, I have company. Give Ethan a big kiss for me. Miss you too. Bye."
"How are they?"
"Deliriously happy. Moving into their Malibu beach house this weekend." I've been happy before, but deliriously? That's a serious amount of happy. The small twinge of envy takes me by surprise. I've never envied couples before, never felt like I was the one missing out. It's not that I don't believe in love. I believe in it. It's that I don't believe it lasts. Over time, all the little hurts pile up, inflicting damage upon damage until one day nothing is left other than the chalk outline and the stink of decay of a once great love. Why bother getting married when the end is already written in? Have fun, love each other, move on. Why fight over old hurts that will never heal? Why make lawyers rich over an ugly side table lamp that neither of you really want? I'm glad for Ethan, though. I'm glad he's deliriously happy. And for the first time in my life, part of me feels like I'm playing a warped version of musical chairs and I'm the last one standing. On the patio, I find my mother tucked into a chaise lounge overlooking the pool. Paper in hand, she takes a sip of her cappuccino and glances up. Look who's living the dream. Over the edge of the glasses that have slipped down her nose, she inspects me with a frown.
It's Sunday. Why are you in a suit?
I examine my Armani. I'm comfortable. Why I need to defend my wardrobe is a mystery to me. Probably because it feels like she's accusing me of something. Something unflattering. Pushing away the subtle jab, I take a seat at the table while Camilla slips into the seat beside me.
I found him,
I casually announce. My eyes immediately meet my mother's across the table. I'm not nearly as cool about telling her as I want to be. Snatching a few grapes from the fruit platter sitting in the middle, I pop one in my mouth and pause for a reaction. She arches a brow. This is the extent of it. I get a patronizing brow if a brow can be patronizing, and in this instant, it most definitely can be. Did you hear what I said?
I heard you perfectly,
she replies in a quiet voice. Then she takes another sip. Nothing big, only the fate of my life hanging in the balance, and my mother's acting out a coffee commercial. So, tell me about him. I'm surprised this isn't followed by a yawn. I knew she wasn't pleased with my plan, but she's taking much longer than I expected to get on board with it. By now, I thought she'd be thrilled at the prospect of a grandchild. God knows my brother won't get around to it anytime soon.
I'll give you two some privacy.
Camilla starts to rise out of her chair, and I intervene, clasping her forearm.
Nuh-uh, you stay put. I need a witness.
Expression pained, Camilla slinks back into her chair. His name is Dane Wilder. He played football.
Wait, Camilla cuts in. Did you say Dane Wilder?
Yeah.
I've met him,
she tells us, tone rife with amusement. At some charity event. Cal's friends with him. The man's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I know less than nothing about football.
That means nothing to me. But you know what does? He played for Notre Dame and graduated at the top of his class.
You know what else impresses me?
His net worth, which means he won't be eyeballing mine.
Also, drop-dead gorgeous.
I shrug away Cam's comment. Not my field of interest. He has good bones.
I'd say, she adds with a smirk. And, here's the big and, he's a total player. Loud and proud about it, too.
I pop another grape in my mouth.
And that's a good thing?
Camilla's expression is one of utter confusion. The crackle of the newspaper gets my attention. With a huff, my mother turns another page.
Because he sounds like her father,
she interjects, her eyes fixed on the paper. Leave it to my mother to be three chess moves ahead. I swear the woman was Yoda in a past life. Not the part where he's worth $40 million, I feel the need to point out. My mother seems to think that I'm biologically wired to develop feelings for the father of my child, I tell Camilla, explaining my mother's remark. I strongly disagree. This is a legal arrangement and nothing more. But my mother eyeballs me. The fact that he wants a relationship less than I do is perfect. There's absolutely no chance of either of us doing something stupid. And when I say we, I mean him.
An odd wariness comes over Camilla's face. Ooh, be careful. I thought the same way about getting married again, and look at me now.
Don't take this the wrong way, but our situations are entirely different. I've never believed in it. I've never even entertained the thought. Big difference.
She shrugs. Never say never. Trust me.
I'm saying it. I'm saying never.
Speaking of arrangements, I turn my attention back to the woman doing a fantastic job of ignoring me.
I want you to come live with me, Mommy.
No.
I knew I was facing an uphill battle, so I press on. My place is huge, and I'm going to need your help for at least the first few months.
I will never live with my children,
she repeats, suddenly looking up, eyes narrowed, expression superior. Even after working a double shift, cleaning homes for 5 straight hours, then going to the supermarket, my mother carried herself like royalty. Back straight, chin held high. I always admired her for that. I still do.
When I try it, I end up looking like a penguin.
Camilla needs me. Her eyes return to her paper. There's a frozen look of dread on Cam's face. Please tell her you can survive without her. Shaking her head, Camilla murmurs out of the side of her mouth,
Your mother scares me. I can't do it.
Then tell Calvin to do it.
Calvin's scared of her too.
Mommy.
No,
she repeats, still looking at that freaking paper.
I will never live with my children.
I recognize the look on her face for what it is. An exercise in futility. It's telling me there's a greater chance of me moving in with her. She suddenly looks up.
Bring him over. I want to meet this Dane Wilder.
She goes back to her paper. Discussion over. Chapter 10. Stella Donovan to Dane Wilder,
CC Steve Engelstein at Engelstein Morgan Law. Subject, the contract. I've taken the liberty of listing some stipulations for our agreement. These are some of the non-negotiables. The child will spend Monday through Friday with the mother, or as negotiated by the father, until a time when the child can choose for him or herself. The father can have the child any time with advanced warning, as long as it doesn't conflict with already planned vacation time. An itemized list of all expenses will be supplied by both parents. Health insurance will be covered by the mother. The father agrees to never introduce the child to a woman unless the time comes when the father chooses to marry. More to follow. My mother would like to meet you if you're amenable. Calvin and Camilla invited us over for a barbecue this weekend.
Dane Wilder. 2. Stella Donovan. CC Steve Engelstein at Engelstein Morgan Law. Subject, re, the contract. I'm amenable to meeting your mother. Smiley face. Yes to the barbecue. In regards to everything on your list, fine. This is my stipulation. We talk everything out. Shit will come up on a daily basis, but we talk about it. We may disagree, but guess what? We still discuss it. We may both get angry. We may both feel shortchanged. And still, we continue to discuss it. We discuss everything until we agree. We vow to never stop talking. The end.
A stupid grin spreads across my face as I stare at the computer screen. This is bad. Head shaking, I type out my response. Stella Donovan. 2. Dane Wilder. CC Steve Engelstein at Engelstein Morgan Law. Subject, re, the contract. You drive a hard bargain. Pick me up at 11 on Saturday.
Dane. As soon as we walk in, we're immediately greeted by Shaw's wife. I've only met her once at some charity function, though from what I can recall, she's real sweet and very much in love with my buddy. She takes the apple pies we brought out of my hands as she's saying her hellos. Cal, the soft and cuddly type, jerks his head in greeting and asks what I want to drink. I tell him a beer and he leads me into the kitchen while his wife and Stella talk. Grabbing 2 Sam Adams out of the refrigerator, Calvin pops the caps off and hands me one. So, what's it like? Arms crossed, he leans against the counter and awaits my answer with undivided attention. He doesn't have to explain. This is a topic every professional athlete simultaneously fears and purposely ignores. It takes complete dedication, 100% of your time, to perform at this level. Most of us don't know how to do anything else. It's great. I don't have to pop half a bottle of painkillers to get out of bed. I can take a day off from working out and not feel guilty. I'm looking forward to having a real Thanksgiving this year. First one since I turned 7. He grunts and looks off. I've been thinking about it. Camilla's pregnant again. Didn't you just have one? Cal smiles. I haven't seen this dude smile in a long time. Not since he won the Super Bowl. My son, yeah. What can I say, except... Picking up his bottle of beer off the counter, he smiles. Be careful. Nah, you got it wrong. This isn't. I thought Stella had explained our arrangement. Stella and I aren't together in that sense. It's an arrangement. Cal's face goes completely flat. Say what? An arrangement, dude. I want a kid. So does she. Neither one of us want to get married. We're keeping it real simple. I take another pull of my beer. Cal starts chuckling. I know for a fact I've never heard this guy laugh, ever. What's so funny? More laughing. You think that's gonna keep things simple? Yeah, that's the whole point of it. Call me a year from now and explain to me how simple it is. Be my pleasure. Unblinking, cold, pale eyes watch me. My buddy is a trained killer. I say this as a compliment. I've seen him carve up defenses faster than a Thanksgiving turkey. The problem is he's studying me as if I'm a defensive formation. There's something different about you. I thought it was retirement, but now I think you're hung up on her. Something about what he said and the way he said it gets on my nerves. I like Shorty, of course I do, but he's seeing ghosts, things that aren't there, imaginary shit. There ain't anything except respect between Stella and me. Yes, we have fun together, and yes, she makes me laugh, at her, and yes, she's probably the first and last person I want to talk to these days. But that's because of our little project. I'm not hung up on her. I don't do hung up. I'm not hung up on her, dude. No offense, I know you're close with the family, but we're just friends. That's all. You'll realize it soon enough, he adds with a sly smirk. It's the smirk. The smirk makes me lose my cool. She's not even my type. Three women are suddenly standing in the doorway of the kitchen. Shaw's wife with Stella and Mrs. Donovan in tow. It has to be Stella's mother. Other than the eyes, the resemblance is remarkable. All three stare at me. None of them look happy. It hits me then, the knowledge that I'm going to pay for this in the not-too-distant future. This is all the makings of an epic karmic ass-kicking with my name on it. I didn't mean to shout. I didn't mean to say it at all. The words felt wrong. One, out of loyalty. She's not only going to be the mother of my child, she's also a good friend. Someone I trust. And two, because if I'm being honest, she kinda is. At least, she is now. I'm also pretty sure that I'm not her type in any way, shape, or form, and Cal was poking at that sore spot with his stick. My gaze settles on Mrs. Donovan, the only one wearing a subtle smile. I move forward to introduce myself. Mrs. Donovan, Dane Wilder. Pleasure to meet you, ma'am. As I gently take her hand in mine, she covers it with her other one. Filled with amusement, her sharp brown eyes assess me. I know the type. This woman is an iron fist in a velvet glove, not unlike her daughter, though her daughter could use a little more velvet and a little less iron.
Call me Mercedes, and I will call you Dane.
Her gentle Spanish accent puts me at ease. Makes me want to kick myself in the teeth for what she overheard. Judging by the current mood in the kitchen, there's no doubt they all know whom I was speaking about. I have yet to look at Stella and fear I'll find disappointment on her face. Or worse yet, pain. She's the last person on the planet I want to hurt. The thought alone digs a hole in my gut.
Why don't we move to the patio? I have appetizers there and the grill is firing up.
Shaw's wife announces. Her upbeat voice edges out the awkward hovering around the room. I direct a grateful smile at her and she smiles back. 10 minutes later, we're all on the patio, eating appetizers and drinking cocktails. I cut a glance at Stella, and catching me, she returns a small smile. Thank God. My little fuck-up seems to be forgiven and forgotten. I knew things were going to go smoothly. This is not going smoothly. Not since Stella's friend arrived an hour ago. Her name is Delia, or Suicide Blonde, as I've come to think of her. This chick has been staring a hole through my head since she walked in. I got up to take my dirty dish into the kitchen, and now she's standing behind me, arms crossed and toe of her spike heels tapping. Wiping my hands on a paper towel, I turn and lean against the counter. Weapon of choice, a lazy smile on my face guaranteed to get under her skin. Shouldn't take long. This one looks like a powder keg. Is this a part where the feisty best friend warns me to treat her right, otherwise you'll throw a glass of water in my face?
Nope. This is the part where the bitchy best friend tells you that if you fuck her over, it will be 50 shades of black and blue, and I promise there won't be any pleasure in it. At least, not for you there won't.
Message received. Still, I must have told her what happened earlier. A bout of shame hits me. Is this little talk aimed at anything in particular?
No. Just a general watch-your-ass warning,
she tells me with a half-smile that has me doubting her. Glad we got that cleared up. She's not leaving. Why is she not leaving?
Collecting knives is a hobby.
She examines her dark nails, shrugs.
I'll leave it there.
I've no doubt she's telling the truth. Everything about her is sharp. The woman's got little black spikes on her shoes, for shit's sake. Stepping into the kitchen, Stella glances oddly at her overprotective, possibly psychotic best friend.
Hey, I've been looking everywhere for you,
she says to me.
My brother's here. I want to introduce you.
It says a lot that I'd rather meet her brother, an Army Ranger, than spend another minute alone with Suicide Blonde. Ready when you are, I say to Stella.
Nice talking to you,
the blonde drawls. I let Stella lead me to safety.
Stella, I've never been so humiliated in my entire life. Screaming that I'm not his type loud enough for the entire block to hear? Fine, so I'm not his type. Did he have to announce it to the world? He's not my type either, even though he's been growing on me. And yet do I go around embarrassing him? No, no, I do not, because I thought we were friends. I thought something nice was happening between us. Something, I don't know what. Serves me right. I've been sitting off to the side of the patio, on a bench overlooking the pool for the past hour, fake smile plastered to my face every time I catch him looking at me. Yep, everything is just swell. I watch him talking to Alex, who wore his uniform here. Even my mother looked at him funny when he walked in dressed for maximum intimidation. Alex laughs, the traitor. Who are you murdering with your eyes? A sly smile stretches across my best friend's face. Between you and Alex, I can't decide which one looks more threatening. You had to wear the studded Louboutins and the Chanel. What is that, a leather corset? A leather chastity belt, Del informs me. Of course it is. You look like one of the characters in your books. Mistress of the Underworld. She's my favorite. Delia follows my line of sight, straight to Dane. You should hit that. Wearing jeans that for once don't have holes in them, draped perfectly over the round globes of his ass, and a white linen shirt that offsets his perpetual tan, he's beyond handsome. Asshole. No way. Not even if he found me attractive, which he doesn't. She flips a pale, manicured hand at me. Trust me, he's attracted. You guys haven't stopped staring at each other since I got here. Why bother hiding it? Two birds, one stone. Delia's intuition borders on supernatural, or maybe witchcraft, and her study of human nature is bar none. Probably two of the reasons she's such an amazing writer. What happened to your legendary powers of observation? I know he doesn't find me attractive for a fact. I'm not his type. How would you know that for a fact? Unless he told you. At my silence, Delia's platinum blonde head whips around. That son of a bitch told you he's not attracted to you? Shh, keep your voice down. Camilla, my mother, and I walked in on him telling Calvin. He literally said, I'm not his type. Delia's eyes narrow. Sinister, scary, scheming. The only way to describe her expression. Nothing new for Delia. He's going down. No, he's not going anywhere. Leave it alone. I give her a very necessary warning glare. Delia is not easily deterred when her emotions are involved. But you're going to drop him, right? You're not going to have a baby with a fuckboy that's too stupid to keep his mouth shut. Yes, I am. When her eyes widen, I continue. He did me a favor. I was starting to enjoy his company a little too much.
which is not only forbidden, but breaking my own rules, the ones I insisted on. If anything, he put things right back into perspective for me. We're raising a child together. Nothing more. Camilla walks up holding her newborn, the baby extremely unhappy about something. She makes a face, bouncing him gently in her arms.
I'm so sorry I disappeared, but I can't get him to stop. I came down to ask your mother for help. She's so good with him.
The baby sniffles and wails some more. Maybe she's in the bathroom. Let me go find her.
Can I try?
Three heads swivel in the direction of the man who has just spoken. Dane stands a few feet from Camilla, hands up, expression eager.
Most dependable hands in the business.
Camilla looks suspicious. I don't blame her. Essentially, Dane is a stranger. A stranger who wants to handle her baby.
Okay, give it a shot,
she agrees, her voice projecting more than a small amount of anxiety. There's some antibacterial gel over there. Dane leaves to douse his hands with hand sanitizer and returns shortly after. Riveted, I watch Camilla gingerly place the little boy into Dane's extra-large hands. He handles the baby comfortably, as if it's an everyday occurrence for him. Then, to everyone's surprise, he drapes the baby over his shoulder and starts murmuring. His hand, spanning wider than the baby's back, draws slow circles.
All I can make out is girls and big problem and diaper twisted up.
A tiny belch later and we're all smiling like idiots, the belch producing an interesting splat on Dane's shirt. I catch an attaboy along with more whispered words of encouragement. Cam, Delia, and I watch in awe as slowly but surely the baby goes from whimpering to sniffling and eventually quiets. Leaning in, Delia whispers,
"Do not fall for this evil juju."
My mother approaches. She stops, her steadfast gaze bouncing between the baby and the man holding the baby, studying them with an expression I don't recognize. It makes me wary. Until her gaze shoots to me. Then it shifts into something I do recognize and don't care for. A look that says, "I told you so." Calvin walks up holding two plates and frowns at the sight.
"Wilder, your hamburgers are ready."
"Never say never,"
a voice to my left whispers. My gaze cuts to Camilla. She shrugs. "Never." In my head, I'm screaming never. The following day, Alex had to leave for Georgia, so I offered to take him to the airport. He's stationed there, though I suspected he was rushing back because there was someone he wanted to see. He pretty much confirmed it when I asked, and he didn't deny it. "Well, what do you think?" I ask Al on the drive to LaGuardia.
"I think you need a bigger car,"
he says, frowning at his hitched-up knees, practically hitting his chest as he tries and fails to get comfortable in my Mini Cooper. "Well?" He scratches the back of his neck, his mouth twisting.
"I mean, he's a cool guy. I don't want to throw shade on the dude when he's not here to defend himself, but..."
Alex tips his dark head left and right.
"Spit it out, your honorable holiness. He's the guy you share laughs and a beer with. He reminds me of the guys on my team. I also wouldn't want him near you any more than I would want Hayes or any of the other guys near you."
We drive the rest of the way in silence as I mull over what Alex said. At the passenger drop-off, he gets out and leans into the open window on the passenger side.
"You'll make the right choice. You always do. And if he fucks up, I can always have him hogtied and airdropped into Bolivia."
I smile then, mainly because it says everything about Al's opinion. Essentially, he thinks Dane is harmless. Otherwise, he would have put an end to it right there and then.
"Love you. Be safe."
My brother smiles, a smile so similar to mine it's sometimes creepy. Then he pats the hood of my car.
"Love you too."
Chapter 11. Dane. Three voicemails and